I didn't move for a minute, and I don't think I'd been at a loss like that since junior high school. I was saved by a loud crash. Juana had carried out a garbage bag of empty bottles and deposited them onto the boardwalk. She looked over at the two of us with a hand on her hip.
I let your dog out, twice.
Thanks. I leaned against my truck and introduced the two women. Juana Balcarcel, this is Undersheriff Victoria Moretti. Vic, Juana. She started over, but then stalled out when she saw me.
Ay, mierda.
She took the step down to glance at Vic, but her eyes kept returning to the side of my face.
Are you all right?
Yep, I'm okay. How's my adversary? She shook her young head, the dark hair swinging.
He was still unconscious when the EMTs loaded him out with the neck brace, but when he woke up, they gave him the cash, since you weren't an official entry. I think that made him feel much better.
She reached in and extended a hand to Vic.
Hi.
Vic shook her hand and smiled.
How you doing?
I felt compelled to continue. Juana's almost got an associate's degree in criminal justice from over in Sheridan. They both ignored me. La Bandita flicked her eyes at my caved-in face and then looked back at Vic.
Is he really the sheriff?
The Italian beauty's head dropped in silent laughter, then raised and considered me.
Yeah, and believe it or not, most of the time he acts like one.
Juana looked at me again, and then back at Vic. I felt like sonar readings were being made, but I wasn't on the same frequency, even though I could see the pings bouncing back and forth between the two.
If you're going to stay, I'm going to have to charge you the double rate for the room.
Chapter 11, October 30th, 9:58 a.m. First, there was pounding on the door, then dog started barking, then my head fell off and rolled across the stained carpet and lodged itself in the corner against the chipped baseboard. At least that's what it felt like. I got up in my boxer shorts, appropriately enough, pulled on a T-shirt from my duffel and stumbled over dog toward the door. If it was Cliff Clyde looking for a rematch, I was going back to my bag, pull out my .45 and just shoot him. I swung the door open and looked at a man with glasses and a graying beard with mustache to match, who was wearing a ball cap that read Coffeen Dino Tune. The name Jim Rogers spiraled in white thread across the left chest pocket of his dark blue coveralls.
You Eric, boss!
I stared at him.
What?
He looked at some of the other doors and the number on mine, sure he'd made a mistake. I cleared my throat. What could it hurt?
Sure, I'm Eric, boss. No, you're not. You're the sheriff from over in Absaroka County.
He studied my face, which still felt like it had fallen off. I glanced at the corner next to the baseboard just to make sure it hadn't.
At least you used to be.
And how do you know that?
I got a speeding ticket last year. Was that nasty little brunette deputy of yours nabbed me?
The voice behind me was sharp.
You were doing 73 in a 55.
I turned to look back at the bed I'd just vacated.
And you had no taillights.
I turned back and looked at the mechanic, who was desperately trying to see over my shoulder.
Can I help you with something?
He focused on me and threw a thumb over his shoulder.
Steve sent me over. I've got a horse trailer out here. We repacked the wheel bearings, fixed the brakes, rewired, and put new tires on.
I reached up and cradled my face before my cheekbone reminded me about the pain.
Right, right.
I took a deep breath and recalled having the vehicle towed into Sheridan for a makeover. I looked around him and could see they had cleaned the old trailer off, and she wasn't looking half bad.
You can just leave it out there, Jim.
He didn't move.
Is there something else?
He nodded.
You gotta pay for it. Oh, you bet.
I closed the door. He was still trying to see who it was that had spoken to him from the bed. It was lucky that the wind was blowing and that he seemed just a bit hard of hearing. I dug into the jeans that I had left on the chair for my wallet as Vic rolled over and luxuriously stretched, revealing a perfectly rounded breast and alert nipple.
She propped herself up on an elbow and used her red-nailed hand to support her tousled head. She made no effort to cover up. I stood there, unable to move, then remembered my mission, opened the door and handed the guy my credit card. I stepped forward and got between him and the provocative room. I closed the door behind me as he finished writing down the numbers and totals. He handed the card back and ripped off a receipt. I took the slip of paper and looked at him. "Anything else?" He shifted his weight and gestured with a thumb again. "Just leave it out here?" "Yep." I waited until he got the trailer unhitched and had climbed back in his truck before I turned and sidled into the room, closed the door, and looked at her. She was still lying on her side with one leg pulled up ankle to calf, one hand still supporting the mussed hair. The other was lazily making circles on the flat of the sheet. More than a little of her body was still exposed, and I took that extra second to take in the swoops and swallows of her general physique. I felt like I should carve a statue. I tossed the transaction papers and my wallet in my open bag, stepped over Dog, and sat on the corner of the bed as she watched me with the tarnished, gold, vulpine eyes.
"A horse trailer?"
I nodded, and it still hurt. "It's a mercy mission."
"You don't even like horses."
"I do, too. It's just that they're big, dangerous, and a poor form of transportation." She bit her lip.
"Two of the three could be said about you."
I reached out and pulled the sheet over the portion of her anatomy that was distracting me as the knocking began at the door again. "Jeez,
you're popular."
I stepped over Dog, who didn't even bother barking this time, and cracked the door slightly open. I expected to see the mechanic. Instead, it was Benjamin who stood there. The 4-foot cowboy looked over his shoulder at the trailer.
"Are you ready to go?"
I squeezed through the doorway, drawing the door closed behind me again. I could see Herschel backing Bill Nolan's red Dodge pickup to the horse trailer. I looked at the little bandito as his eyes traveled up and down my frame from underneath his sweat-stained cowboy hat.
"I never seen anybody in their bedclothes at 10 o'clock in the morning. You sick?"
He studied my face a little closer.
"Boy, that's a shiner."
I held up a finger. "Just a second, okay?" He nodded. I turned, shut the door, and gazed at the exquisite female stretching luxuriously on the bed of the squalid motel room. I cleared my throat and felt the pain in my head increase. After one of the best nights of my life, I think I'm about to pay for it with one of my worst days. October 26th, 4 days earlier, afternoon. She had been petting Dog, who had rested his head on the hospital bed, but she continued to ignore me. "Mary, if you don't tell me what happened that night, then I can't help you." She looked up, and her expression made me wonder why I was trying. "If I go through the report, would you at least give me an indication as to what you agree with and what you don't?" She continued scratching the dense fur behind Dog's ears near the furrow of his bullet scar. "I know it hurts, but Isaac says you can talk." I slumped back against my folding chair, picked the report up from my lap, and flipped the page. "In your initial statement to the investigators in Campbell County..." She rolled over on her side and continued scratching Dog under his chin. I watched her for a moment, then stood and patted my leg. "Dog." The beast was by my side in an instant and followed me. I pointed toward Janine's desk at the end of the hall. "Go." I backed into the room, closed the heavy door behind me, sat in the hospital chair with a report in my lap, and tipped my hat back. "No talk, no Dog." She looked up at me. We sat there, staring at each other. I took a deep breath, thought about Katie and another hospital bed, and relied on my last, most secret approach when confronted by female opposition. I begged. "Please help me. I can't do this alone." The muscles in her face softened just a touch. She considered me, finally clearing her throat and licking her lips as if she hadn't spoken in years. I stared at the bandages at her throat and thought about how she'd looked on the floor of the examination room just yesterday. When my eyes met with hers again, she barely nodded, and her voice was a fragile whisper.
Okay.
I've got some questions about the timing of that night. I carefully avoided actually mentioning her husband's murder. Do you remember leaving the house? She nodded almost imperceptibly. Do you have any idea when that was? She shrugged and then lay there looking at me. Before midnight? After?
Before.
She didn't wheeze quite so much with this answer. You don't have any idea when? She shook her head and swallowed carefully.
Why?
The volunteer fire department in Clearmont didn't get a 1070 fire alarm until almost 1 o'clock in the morning. I lowered the report and looked at her. That seems like an awful lot of time between the fire in the barn and the anonymous call.
I could have been confused about the times.
I don't think you were. I allowed the pages of the report to fall against my chest. Mary, you stated in the report that the hired man, Herschel Van Schaike, was the one who found you. I let the image sit there with her for a moment. Was there anybody else there that night?
No.
You're sure? I leaned forward, closed the file, and dropped it flat on the floor between my boots as a symbolic gesture. Mary, for me to really know what happened to you that night, I need you to think about it clearly and tell me. See, I'm beginning to think that there were a lot more people there than you're willing to say, and possibly more than you know about. I rolled my lip under my teeth. Let's start with the ones you do.
Why is this so important to you?
Her voice was stronger with this question, even if it was without emotion. I stared at her and then nodded toward the manila folder on the floor. This is your life we're talking about. I stood up and walked over to the window. I could see the back of Kyle Straub's sign, where another meadowlark was singing. There was something about the sign that was bothering me, and not just because it was a reminder that the thought of Kyle Straub or his grammar made my ass hurt. I let it submerge in my mind and shifted my weight from one size 14E to the other. It's going to happen like this. The statements that you've made to the Campbell County investigators are enough to... I stopped speaking and turned to look at her. They don't get many high-profile cases like this one. Generally, it's Bubba shot Skeeter while they were drinking beer in the cab of Skeeter's truck and trying to figure out if Bubba's Charter Arms revolver was loaded. I leaned back and sat on the windowsill. You see, the mechanism that I'm a part of, it feeds on high octane. And that's what this case is. Everybody is going to want a piece of it, of you. The sun cast shadows on the crown of my hat. They'll call for a change of venue, and they'll get it. Possibly Casper, maybe Cheyenne, and you'll get a jury trial, and that won't go well for you. I've stood through a lot of trials, and I can tell you that those prosecutors are going to tap into something, a virulent little strain of human nature that's going to sway that jury into getting somebody, somebody rich, beautiful, and powerful, somebody they've never had a chance of getting before. It's going to be you, Mary, and not just because you confessed. She watched me intently.
Why, then?
Because you are incapable of showing the one thing that they are going to demand, whether you're guilty or not. Repentance. They want you to feel sorry. It makes them feel better about themselves. I couldn't look her in the eye, so I turned my face and gazed at the pillow beside her head. Most people
Her head dropped a little. But with my peripheral vision, I could see she kept her eyes on me, on my polyester shirt, and my dull and unpolished badge, still with traces of her blood in the engraving. They go through their lives, believing in things that they never have much contact with. The police, lawyers, judges, and courts. They have an unstated belief in the system that it'll be impartial, fair, and just. I could hear normal conversations through the door. It was good to know that normal conversations could still happen while I was engaged in this one. But then there's the moment when it comes to them that the police, the courtroom, and the laws themselves are just human, vulnerable to the same shortcomings as all of us, that they're a mirror of who we are. And that's the heartbreaking dichotomy of it all, that the more contact you have with the law, the less belief you have. I took a breath. Like some strange little religion all its own, the one thing that makes the whole system work is the one thing it robs you of. Faith. I turned my face and looked at her directly. But you have to believe that justice is truly blind, and that those scales aren't tipped. She had taken a breath of her own.
Or what?
Or else, you're in a dark place. She looked at the sheets covering her legs.
But you haven't answered my question. Why is this important to you?
I smiled sadly. This is important to me because I believe you're innocent. And I've spent most of my life defending and protecting the innocent. I crossed to the door and opened it. I'll let you in on another little secret. The sheriff of Campbell County believes you're innocent, too. Otherwise, he never would have sent you over here to me. I allowed Dog to enter the room. The beast was waiting outside the door. He looked at her, then at me. I nodded, and he crossed to the bed and placed his broad head next to her hand. Mary, tell me about that night. She had laughed a sad exhale and scratched the fur on his muzzle as his big tail fanned in a counterclockwise circle, the way it always did when he was happy. October 30th, 2:20 p.m. We drove across the railroad tracks and headed south on a Shetta Road, which went past the local cemetery. It was an odd place with an iron archway and two bands that went across the drive to which the words Absalom Cemetery were attached. There were lights on either side, a ranch gate below that was closed to keep any stray cattle from grazing between the markers, and a cross affixed above which was black against a sky so blue it hurt my eyes. Most everything hurt my eyes this morning, so I closed them and nodded off. It was a good thing that Herschel was driving. I woke up when we hit a rough stretch on the only road leading to and from the battlements' flat mesa, and I hoped we wouldn't meet another truck as there was only room for one and a half. It was the kind of road where if you met anybody coming up or going down, somebody was going to have to put it in reverse. My headache was subsiding, but only commensurate with the increasing pain of my eye socket. I'd tried to cradle my face in my hand with an elbow resting on the truck's windowsill, but the constant jolting of the uneven road only resulted in my periodically punching my damaged face with the palm of my hand. It was an ongoing battle, which had not gone unnoticed by Benjamin, who was seated on the bench seat between Herschel and me. I stretched my jaw and felt the unsettling pop in my temple.
I bet that hurts.
I glanced down at the little bandito as he leaned forward to get a better look at my face. I pulled my Ray-Bans from my shirt pocket and slipped them on in an attempt to hide the evidence. You'd be right, he nodded.
Have you decided what your name is today?
I shrugged. I thought we'd all go by aliases.
You mean nicknames?
He seemed excited by the thought and turned his attention to Herschel for approval.
Sure.
The older cowboy's face remained immobile as he negotiated the grade, the oversized pickup, and the 2 tons of trailered horseflesh behind us. The boy struggled against his seatbelt, which was my dictate, and peered over the dash at the road ahead.
I'm going to be El Bandito Negro de los Badlands.
I waited a moment before replying. You don't think that's a little long? He looked dissatisfied with my response.
Why?
Well, if I have to say, El Bandito Negro de los Badlands, look out for that rattlesnake, you're likely to already be bitten. He swiveled in the seat back toward Herschel and pulled the stampede strings into his mouth.
Are there rattlesnakes up here?
The puncher shrugged.
Rattlesnakes everywhere.
We topped the mesa and turned northeast. The top of 20 Mile Butte looked like a pool table for Jack of Beanstalk fame. If there had been dinosaurs up there, you'd be able to see them from a long way off. Herschel pulled the caravan to the left and slowed. The boy looked at him.
Why are we stopping?
He growled.
Because my nickname is Pequeña Vejiga.
Benjamin laughed as Herschel climbed out, unzipped, and began watering the broken rocks at the edge of the road. I decided to get out and stretch my legs, thinking a little air might clear my lingering headache, and figuring dog could always use a leg-lifting opportunity. Benjamin followed us as we walked into the middle of the rutted and powdery two-track that stretched to the horizon. The only other road curled off to the right and disappeared into the distance as well. I thought about how we tilled and cultivated the land, planted trees on it, fenced it, built houses on it, and did everything we could to hold off the eternity of distance. Anything to give the landscape some sort of human scale. No matter what we did to try and form the West, however, the West inevitably formed us instead. I watched the dust collect on the left side of my boots as the constant wind kicked up a dust devil about 75 yards down the road. Dog looked up at me, and Benjamin took a few steps past us, and I could feel the palpable urge in him to go chase the miniature twister. This is the biggest butte in all of Wyoming. I had to smile at the absolute assurance of all his statements.
No, it's not.
He looked up at me and pulled the stampede strings into his mouth again. I was beginning to see a pattern.
Is two?
No, because technically it's a mesa. He turned his head and searched the horizon for justification.
Mr. Bandito Negro de los Badlands, you want to know what the difference is?
Maybe I had dampened his enthusiasm because his voice mumbled as he chewed the braided leather and a hand crept down to pet dog.
Nope, not really.
I started to raise an eyebrow, but it hurt my eye, so I settled for nudging him with my elbow. I shudder for the fate of future generations if your scientific curiosity is indicative. He shook his head at my funny talk.
You gonna feel better if you tell me?
I thought about it. Yes. He didn't deign to look at me, but threw out an open palm, as if to accept the unwanted knowledge. A butte is taller than it is wide, whereas a mesa, like this one, is wider than it is tall.
What's Devil's Tower?
I thought about it. That'd be a butte. He looked puzzled.
Then why do they call this 20 Mile Butte?
With respect to all the knowledge that our frontier forefathers carried, a steadfast understanding of geological terms may not have been a strong suit. He nodded, and we listened to the wind.
You ever been up here before?
I kept my eyes on the edge of the world, which was to the south. With the vastness of the plateau, it was difficult to tell if we were looking at the edge, but I had my suspicions.
Once or twice.
When?
I glanced down at the top of his hat, thankful for a view that didn't pull at the corners of my eyes, especially the sore one.
When I was about your age.
He looked up at me with the stampede string still in his mouth and continued to pet dog, who now sat on his foot.
Really?
Yep.
He looked around.
Is it the same?
No.
I shrugged back at the dirt path we'd just driven up. There weren't any roads, and the only way up was a horse trail that they must have built this road over.
Were you hunting Indians?
I smiled down at the half-Cheyenne boy. Nope. As a matter of fact, it was Indians who brought me up here. I figured I'd finally hit upon a subject that truly interested him since he spit out the stampede strings and looked up at me.
Cheyenne?
Yep.
I'm half Cheyenne.
I know. He now turned toward me fully, forcing Dog to reseat himself.
My father was Cheyenne.
Was?
He's dead.
I nodded, and his next statement was as if we were discussing the difference between buttes and mesas.
He got run over by a train.
I stopped nodding. I'm sorry. He stood there for a while without moving.
Why do people say that?
He took as deep a breath as his young lungs would allow and sighed.
It's not like I think they drove the train.
Well, maybe they're just sorry for your loss. He nudged Dog and walked past me to the edge of the road.
He lived in Chicago with my mom. That's where I was born.
He took his frustration out on a few rocks with the toes of his scuffed boots, his hands stuffed tight in his jeans as if he didn't trust them.
He was a construction worker. He built big buildings and bridges.
I nodded, even though he still wasn't looking at me, and patted my leg for Dog to come over.
My mom was mad at him because he took me up on one of the bridges he was working on one night. He carried me up on the girders and stood with me over the water, and it was really far down.
Dog sat on my foot, and we both looked at the boy. The water?
Yeah, and you could see the reflections in the river from all the lit-up windows because it was nighttime.
He turned to look at us.
We flew that night.
I didn't say anything.
I mean, we didn't really, except for maybe 1 second. But he held me out over the water and told me to not be afraid because even if he dropped me, I'd just fly.
He kept looking me in the face, the way only children can without becoming self-conscious.
I closed my eyes for just a second when he held me out there, and I think I really flew. For just a second, really.
His dark eyes seemed remarkably familiar for just a moment.
Do you think I'm crazy?
I laughed. No, I don't think you're crazy.
You aren't going to tell my mom about me flying, are you? Because she doesn't know about that part.
No, I won't tell her. He continued to study me.
Why'd you laugh?
It was a time for truth-telling, and with children, if you didn't make the reach, they might learn to stop asking. I have dreams like that. He smiled back at me, and something passed between us, something old and powerful. Herschel approached from around the truck, placing his palms at the small of his back and stretching.
Did you fellas know this is the biggest butte in Wyoming?
Benjamin, Dog, and I continued to look at each other, and we smiled. But none of us said anything. October 30th, 4:30 p.m. We drove the truck as far as the first high shelves of rock that rose above the plateau, which created a giant series of sedimentary steps leading north. Herschel paired me off with a big bay about 17 hands and watched as I tightened the belly cinch with a quick yank before the gelding could expand his lungs. Satisfied that I knew what I was doing, he assisted Benjamin in saddling the same gruya that I had seen in front of the R as his dun waited patiently by the shade of the horse trailer along with Dog.
I'll give you that big one so you'd be comfortable, and so he would be too.
I checked the bedroll he'd provided and the saddlebags I'd brought along. I appreciate it.
Only one we got bigger is a Morgan from up in Montana, but he can get wonky when you put a saddle on him.
The thought of a wonky draft horse on the high plateau was one my rear end was just as happy not to contemplate.
This one got a name?
The old cowboy replied with a well-worn sentiment.
Don't like naming things I might have to eat. You got any rawhide? Some of the saddle strings on this one are broke off a little short.
He motioned toward the rear end of the trailer, so I walked back and took some strings from a hook inside the door. Herschel had already established squatter's rights. There was an antiquated McClellan saddle, along with an old cavalry canteen with the number 10 and the letter G stenciled onto its canvas side. It would appear that Herschel was quite the collector. I fixed the strings on my horse's saddle and tied my horsehide jacket to the bedroll. I found a neckerchief in the inside pocket and knotted the bandana at my neck, slipped a foot in the stirrup, and stepped up, gently flinging a leg over the bay. He took a slight counter to the left, but then planted and turned to look at me, probably wondering why it was I was riding him and not vice versa. Then his long face turned south, almost as if he were looking for something in particular. I searched the horizon along with him, but saw nothing, and turned him along with the others. After getting the boy saddled and seated, Herschel checked the sawbuck rigging on the pack horse and the canvas bags filled with supplies, oats, and 2 5-gallon containers of water, which we especially needed since there wasn't any on the entire mesa. Benjamin gigged his horse and yelped as it crow-hopped a little to the right and shot out about 20 feet before stopping and craning its long neck to inspect the foreign ground. Herschel laughed and climbed aboard his own mount, where he readjusted the Henry Yellow Boy in his rifle scabbard and draped the old cavalry canteen I'd seen in the trailer off the horn of his saddle.
"You know what they say about a horse being only afraid of 2 things?
"What's that?"
"Things that move and things that don't."
I smiled at the old joke and followed as he trailed the pack horse from a lead position. The horses fell into a walking pace, with Dog going up ahead to stay with Benjamin. There are people who prefer the spring and summer on the high plains, but I'm not one of them. My blood quickens and I begin to sleep better when the